This is Session 362, the Mormon Feminist Community of Exponent 2, its history, its legacy, and its future. And if you're not familiar with the amazing work that's being done with the new print version of Exponent 2 and the liveliness of this community, you're in for a treat. We have three presenters today, and we'll go in the order of the program. Amy Evans Hickman has a BA in English from the University of Utah. She was president of Exponent 2 from 2004 to 2007 and the co-editor of Exponent 2, 2009 to the present. She's a stained glass artist, the mother of three small people, like that, and a resident of Baltimore, Maryland. Barbara Taylor has a BA in business management and is the president of Exponent 2. She lives in Pocatello, Idaho. Caroline Klein is a resident of Irvine, California, and a graduate of Scripps College with an MA in Classics from UC Santa Barbara. She is the co-founder of the Exponent blog and plans to begin a PhD program in Women's Studies and Religion at Claremont Graduate College this fall. So please join me in welcoming our presenters.
In 1974, a group of women that fondly call the founding mothers of Exponent 2 launched the magazine. They were inspired by the Women's Exponent, which had been published by Emmeline B. Wells and others in the 1870s. It was the inspiration of the Women's Exponent that helped these women kind of cement their decision to start this publication. They had worked together on a book called Beginner's Boston and had found that camaraderie and sisterhood during that particular project, something that really cemented them as a community. But it was in 1974, there was a lot of feminist activity at that time, and they decided that they wanted to make a difference. I joined the group in 1981 when we moved to the Boston area, and just to kind of give you some context, we weren't exactly printing the paper on the Gutenberg press, but almost. We had, Carol Sheldon's husband, Garrett, had built us these boxes that we then had frosted glass sheets that we kind of propped up against them. And we would lay the big pieces of newsprint on that, and then we had a typist, and she would type all the copy, and then we would tape this copy onto these sheets of newsprint using strips that had the calibrations on them. And then once that was taped up, the proofreaders would read, and then if there was something wrong, you would cut that out with an X-Acto knife and take it over to the typist. She would type it correctly. You would then cut it with your X-Acto knife, take over, and tape it again. You can imagine the process of this. It was just arcane. But it was so much fun. It took us about 2 weeks to paste up, and we would spend odd hours during the day, burn the midnight oil. Sometimes I'd get home at 1 or 2 in the morning and have to get up and go to work the next day. But those experiences were just life-changing. That's the only word I can use. It was a community. We were raising our children together. Most of us had callings in the church. It gave us an opportunity to sit and talk about issues. There was so much going on in the world that was not being talked about at church. And so it was a fabulous opportunity for us to get together as a community and just engage in a way that we felt was meaningful. And not only to those of us that were there in the Boston area, actually engaged in the work of the paper, but also kind of casting that net out into the greater community. And it was a wonderful opportunity. I'm so grateful that I was there during those years. We did many things. I think that, we talk a lot about a global responsibility and the responsibility to our individual communities. And I think of some of the differences that we made in the lives of people. There was, we did a, an issue on abuse, and it was just numbing the number of articles that were submitted to us. Many of them from individuals who said, I've never told anyone that I was abused. I felt there was no system to support me, that no one would believe me. And it was, we were just astounded at the incidence of abuse within the church. And, you know, talking to any of the, certainly any of our area leaders in Boston, we would talk to them, say, oh, that's, you know, that's happening outside. That doesn't happen within the church. And we'd say, yes, it does. Yes, it does. And we actually decided to do a conference. And so we reserved a room at Randolph University, and we had a conference on abuse. And we invited counselors and individuals who had been victims of abuse. We invited local church leaders. And it was an overwhelming success. We actually filled this big auditorium at Randolph University. And we subsequently met with members of the state presidency, who then, of course, we had all kinds of statistics and stuff. BYU Women's Studies had done some research on this. We had their statistics that we used. We passed that on. That then made its way to Salt Lake. And within 6 months, the bishops all over the church were presented with a handbook on how to handle incidences of abuse and domestic violence within their wards. And certainly I think that was going, you know, there was, I can't imagine that we were the only ones that were engaged in this work, but, you know, we felt like we had kind of helped push that through, maybe push them over the edge a little bit, and felt very proud of the work that we had done with that. Over the years, I feel like the publication really addressed issues that were just, I mean, part of the reason that we undertook this task was because there were dialogues that needed to happen that were not happening, that conversations that people could not have within the established context of the church. And so we published whole issues on homosexuality, abuse, being single in a married church, blended families, abortion, everything from, you know, how do you decide how many children to have? Just conversations that we knew people were having, but were not being supported in those conversations from the context of Mormonism. Another thing that we actually have tried very hard to do is in our mission statement, it talks about how we are, our form is the personal essay. We are not trying to be scholarly. We are not dialogue. We are not Sunstone. We are women's voices. And not only women's voices. We often publish male feminist views as well, I think. Our homosexuality issue, we actually had several articles in there from gay men and the impact. In fact, all of our art was for that issue was done by a gay man that was living in the Boston area at the time. And he tells his very sad story as one of the beginning articles about how his Mormon family essentially disowned him. And he still, to this day, receives clippings and little things from his mother telling him what an abomination his lifestyle is in the eyes of the Lord and stuff. Very sad. Okay. But we feel like the publication has really served just...
Closer.
I'm sorry. I feel like I'm... Sorry, I feel like a rock star.
Yay!
But anyway, but it's been a pleasure to be associated with this group of women. I mean, they are just indomitable. Sorry. I'm such a slob. But they are, and I am so grateful for this group of just dynamic young women who are letting us pass the baton to them. I've been involved in Exponent now for 30 years, and it is so dear to me. And those of us that have been involved in it for such a long time are so invested in its progression, but none of us have the energy to move it. And so we are so grateful for this group of young women who are stepping into that space and so lovingly and capably accepting what we feel is our legacy as we pass this on. And I'm grateful for the support that we have had. We almost died. We really did almost die. We had to stop publishing hard copy because we just did not have the subscription base to support that financial obligation. And we went online, and Caroline and Emily Clyde Curtis and Jana Remy took on the task of creating the blog and have kept the blog going, which then allowed us to transition to our fabulous new editors who then published this wonderful issue that is just so wonderful and published it online, and now we're hoping to get back to hard copy publishing again because that's really what we do. The Exponent 2 publication is I think necessary. I think blogging, and certainly I went to the Feminist Mormon Housewives blog presentation earlier today, and there is such a need for that kind of dialogue as we have with the Exponent blog, such a need for that kind of immediate interface, that conversation. But certainly I think there's a place for also the expression of the personal essay and letting women tell their stories and their experience, whether for good or for ill. And I think we've been publishing Exponent now for 37 years. Hopefully it'll go on for another 37. Question was posed this morning in one of the workshops about how are you positioning yourself for the next wave of technology. And I remember saying to Amy, we don't know what the next wave of technology is. How can we possibly position ourselves for it? But we certainly, what we can do is hopefully keep our hearts, our ears, and our eyes open for opportunities to continue to allow women to have their voices be heard in a meaningful way, and be proactive about that, and make sure that we are supporting each other in those efforts, whatever forum we are choosing. And I thank you.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here today. The first time I heard about Exponent 2 was about 10 years ago when I was a newly married 23-year-old. Having attended a women's college, I identified as feminist and Mormon.
Now I
know. Even closer. Okay. Okay. But I had never met anyone else who shared both those proclivities. I had no idea that there were Mormon feminist communities, Mormon feminist writings, until my husband, who was more widely read in the field of Mormon studies than I was, mentioned Maxine Haynes' book, Women in Authority. And in this book, I saw the chapter that featured excerpts of both the Women's Exponent and Exponent 2. I was riveted. My eyes nearly popped out of my head as I read about these Exponent 2 women speaking frankly about giving their babies blessings, about abortion, about ERA and women's ordination. There were other women out there that thought about and wrote about these things. It was a revelation to me. Exponent 2 came into my life again a few years later when I was assigned to visit teach Jana Remy. Oops. I have a picture of her. Hold on one second. There we go. Jana Remy is the one right in the middle with the dark hair. On our first visit, we talked about the proclamation and our concerns about it. By the end of the visit, she handed over to me a stack of her mother's Exponent 2s for me to borrow. I pored over them, and the next time I saw her, I told her that I was determined to become a part of this organization.
Jana suggested that we volunteer to guest edit a Southern California issue of Exponent 2. So we worked for months to solicit articles, put together panels and roundtables to later write up as articles. When that was done, we looked for our next project. The more we thought about how we could help this organization, the more convinced we became that in order for it to survive and flourish, it would need a major web presence. A blog which could foster immediate community and communication, which could function as a home for all those other women, like me from a few years before, who were yearning for conversation on these matters and not finding it in their own immediate communities. At the time Jan and I came up with the idea for the blog, the publication was slowing down a bit, and Feminist Mormon Housewives, the big gorilla in the feminist Mormon blogging world, had become hugely popular. We were hoping that an Exponent 2 blog could support the publication and tap into this new blogging generation of Mormon women interested in issues of gender. Just as one feisty author of the Old Women's Exponent proclaimed, "Let woman speak for herself," we saw the blog as a place where women would be able to direct the conversation, speak frankly of their insights and experiences as Mormon women, and of their dreams for the future. The blog was born on January 2006. As I've worked on this blog and with this organization for the past several years, I've become impressed and fascinated by the ways these thoughtful feminist women balance their faith with their feminism, how in the midst of some tension with the church organization, they innovate and create. Theorist Mary Bednarowski beautifully describes this phenomenon of innovation among women navigating patriarchal traditions in her book, The Religious Imagination of the American Woman. She gives it the name of religious ambivalence, saying, and I have the quote up here because I love this quote, "It is a willed ambivalence, a sustained and cultivated ambivalence, an aware ambivalence. This is an ambivalence that requires women always to be vigilant, always to be critical of their community's inclinations toward exclusion and distortion, and at the same time, be open to new possibilities to hold up or reform or transform or dig up from wherever they have been hiding their tradition's most liberating and healing insights." I see all of that going on the blog and in the magazine and in the retreats. Women willing to point out and talk about the problems of certain Mormon ideas and practices, but also willing to search deep within their tradition for those liberating insights that empower and sustain. Now, a little bit about the blog. I see it as an ancillary arm to the organization, a way to reach out to all those random people all over the world that are Googling Mormon and feminism and Heavenly Mother and so forth. I see it as a way to create instant community for them and a place to discuss their questions and tell their stories. Here is the mission statement of the Exponent 2 organization. And in bringing to life the blog, we had to consider carefully how exactly we were going to fulfill this mission statement. As I studied it, a couple of things leapt out to me. First, its breadth. This organization is for all women who A, are committed to women, and B, claim a connection to the LDS Church. It says nothing about activity or observance level. It says nothing about what form that commitment to women has to take. This told me that we needed to do our best to form an online community that could support various levels of orthodoxy and practice. As I've inhabited this online community of Mormon feminism for the last 5 years, it's become apparent that we need women on both sides of the Mormon feminist gamut. Those who are active, perhaps they are the stealth feminists, as I call them. These are the ones that quietly, gently infiltrate their wards and pragmatically push for those baby steps to move women forward in the church. Or there are also those ones, we also need those idealistic ones, those revolutionary ones who tell their stories and in so doing advocate for change towards inclusion in the actual structure of the Mormon Church. As Lori Winter Stromberg once pointed out, these revolutionaries who push boundaries serve a very important purpose. They show the rest of us what the boundaries are when they face church discipline, so that the rest of us actually know where the lines are, because sometimes we would not know otherwise. They also make, and this is what Lori Stromberg said, they also make other more pragmatic feminists look, in comparison, moderate and reasonable to the average Mormon. The Exponent blog has done its best to invite both types of feminists, both the pragmatists and the idealists, and everyone in between to the table, to keep the dialogue going and to form bridges of understanding between these different types. Now, a little bit about the blog. So here's some of our stats, as you can see. We've been publishing for about 4.5 years, and we're by no means the biggest Mormon blog out there, but we're proud of ourselves. We've got 22 permabloggers at this point, and we've had a little over 1,100 posts. A post is like a mini essay. We've had 17,000 comments, and about 30,000 to 50,000 views per month. I know that's not as big as other people, but boy, like, I think it's so exciting that people are finding this. And perhaps most interestingly, it's our Relief Society lessons, which I will talk about in a second, which get a huge chunk of the viewage. Okay, now, as for the content of what we do on this blog, our main staple is the personal essay. This is, of course, for the blog and the magazine. And these essays, these little post essays, can take many forms. Some are reactions and insights from contemporary events in the world. Some are reflections on insights we have gained from various challenges or experiences. And some explore the problems and the possibilities in Mormonism and the innovations that have worked for us. And I just wanted to highlight quickly a couple of examples. Here is a post called "Woman Am I, a Blessing Way Night," and this was put out by Elisa, in which she talks of creating a woman-centered ritual, a blessing way, which was surrounding the birth of her child. Among other things, she describes this ritual of giving a bead to Elisa, who was pregnant at that time. And this bead represented a blessing or something that the woman wanted Elisa to know about motherhood. And then Elisa goes through and she reflects on this ritual in a very beautiful way, which I won't get into because of time. But I just love this because what a way to show the world of Mormons that we can create our own rituals. Like, we don't have to be necessarily bound by the church structure. We can just go ahead and form our own. So I thought that was just wonderful. Here's another one where I talk about creating a new God language that is more inclusive. I talk about how I have dropped the term Heavenly Father and instead use God or Heavenly Parents whenever possible. And as a side note, I'm not the only one doing this. I've noticed that a lot of Mormon people are doing this, these Mormons that are yearning for a more inclusive God language. And I mentioned these two in particular because I thought they were great examples of that phenomenon that Mary Benarowski described a few slides ago, that religious ambivalence, this way of out of your tension, becoming creative and innovative. Another thing that we do on the blog is we do a lot of kind of artistic features. And I think this might be one thing that sets us apart a little bit from the two other main feminist Mormon blogging sites, Zelophehad's Daughters and Feminist Mormon Housewives. We have our own poets. Brooke over here, this is a post she did on trees. She writes beautiful little poems. We have Linda Hoffman Kimball, who also is a poet. And we also feature women photographic artists. So we try to do this Friday photo feature and have people send in their work to us so that we can highlight that on the blog. And finally, the last thing that we do on the blog is the Relief Society lessons. Now, this was actually a stroke of genius. In trying to figure out a way to reach mainstream Mormon women as well as feminists, we decided to write lesson plans for every lesson in the Relief Society manual. We're the first site that pops up when all these desperate teachers on Saturday night Google the lessons searching for help. In these lessons, we suggest good discussion questions, we try to include women's voices, and we give inclusive and progressive spins to the lessons. We are apparently infiltrating countless Relief Societies, and they probably don't even know it. In fact, all these women that get on, you should hear their gratitude as they read these lessons, and we have wonderful questions about Heavenly Mother. I mean, we really are trying to be progressive in these lessons, and they just write us glowing comments thanking us for these lesson plans, and they have no idea who we are. I mean, they have no idea. The next thing I wanted to briefly get into, here's a lesson plan here. The next thing I wanted to get into a little bit was just to talk about the challenges of running or being a part of an organization like this. As you can see from all these screenshots that I've been showing, we've gone through a few different incarnations of the blog. And just as we're constantly rethinking our layout, we're also constantly, and more importantly, rethinking the optimal balance in terms of tone. How fiery should we be? How reflective should we be? Do we aim more towards the Mormon feminist who is staunchly believing? Do we aim for the one who is self-consciously rejecting and choosing? Do we do both equally? And even thornier, how do we treat those who come, and they always do, and tell us on the blog that we should just resign our membership right now for questioning the prophet. There are those among us who favor the bridge image for the exponent blog. These ones think that we should gently respond to these people and explain ourselves, and maybe some will begin to get what we're doing eventually. These bridge permabloggers are concerned about staying relevant in the wider Mormon community, and they feel that by being very careful with our tone, we can reach more people. Others, however, among us favor the haven image, and they feel that this is our space, and they don't like it when we coddle people who have just rudely attacked us. These haven-favoring permas and readers want to fire back and call them out for their self-righteousness and their judgmentalism. So as you can see, this is an ongoing balancing act. And of course, since we function in an egalitarian fashion, no one permablogger has more say than the other, it can become really difficult. Because ideally, we want to move forward with a unanimous consensus. There are these conversations that have no doubt been a part of Exponent 2 for decades, and I'm sure they will continue. And finally, in conclusion, I wanted to share with you a post that meant so much to me in my journey here. This organization of Exponent 2, it's just meant everything to me in my own journey as I've tried to navigate a patriarchal church. I found kindred spirits, and I found friends who have challenged me and stretched me in new ways. I found innovative ideas on how to navigate and healing insights that I can cling to in times of difficulty. This was a post that M. Raines put up, and I just wanted to share this with you. It's the story of a woman's feminist awakening. I love this because I thought it encapsulated so well why organizations like Exponent 2 are crucial, why we need outlets like this to write and to voice our truth. It's an artistic and beautiful rendering of a moment when M. Raines was at BYU in a class, and they were discussing women's role in the church and gospel. In the post, she describes feeling this crushing sensation of pain as this discussion was going on in front of her, and she writes this in her blog post. In desperation, I cried out, "Why?" in the class. "Why have I never heard this before? Why haven't they taught this to us?" I did not recognize my voice, but I recognized the pain, a deep primal pain that my body had been hiding in a forgotten sinew. In the awakening of a deeper consciousness, the unheard sob of my soul escaped and hung in the air as a cry for help. For a moment, I saw my pain reflected, briefly igniting in the eyes of my dear teacher, and then disappearing just as quickly as it had come. That was all the answer I needed, the knowledge that the pain was real, and I had not awakened to be alone in this new and often inhospitable world. She goes on to say, "I share this story not only because it is the story of my feminist awakening, but because there is power in the sharing. I have never spoken of it before. It was a memory known only to me and perhaps my teacher, and I kept it because it was raw and painful. But as I sat down to write this essay, it was this experience that kept bubbling to the top, longing to be released, longing to be shared, longing to be healed." And Emery's hit this one out of the ballpark for me. I absolutely recognize the pain she described. I recognize the shame. I recognize the deep need to share. And as I read this, I wanted to reach out and give her a huge virtual hug and tell her that she's right. She's not alone. We're out there too. And actually, it was in the post. There is indeed a healing in the sharing of these experiences. Exponent 2 figured out decades ago. They figured out all that decades ago when they created this organization. And its vision lives on today as it holds wonderful retreats, revives the magazine, and reaches into new technological media. And as for the future, we have hopes to further extend Exponent 2's reach by using some new state-of-the-art software, which will facilitate us combining posts into books that we can actually publish. This is a brand new thing coming out, so watch for this in the future. We at the Exponent blog are constantly on the lookout for other cutting-edge technology to provide new forums for women's voices. Thank you.
Yep.
shoot. Thanks for everything both of you have already said. I feel like some of this might be a little bit redundant because we're just constantly talking about how much we love Exponent, but I think that you all are here because you want to hear that. By way of a little bit of background, I'm just going to share, as Barbara and Caroline have, a little bit of how Exponent, how I became involved with Exponent, and then talk about our new publication and what we are hoping to achieve in the next few years. Exponent 2 came into my life at a pivotal moment in my own religious journey. By way of background, I was born and raised in Provo, the oldest of three girls. My dad, who was an imposing 6'3" mass of muscle and ambition, yearned for the strength of a boy. And he would often humorously refer to us three girls as his boys. Though this moniker may sound very unfeminist, in practice, I was charged with the tasks that were usually traditionally the domain of men, from learning to lay a roof to delivering furniture with my dad in our family business to digging irrigation ditches to running our business. Without ever needing it to be said explicitly, I was raised with an inherent sense that I was not limited by gender. A task or an idea only needed a brain, and most of the time I have that. As my parents worked side by side and shouldered responsibilities regardless of stereotypical gender roles, I grew up unconsciously, inherently, and fervently feminist. I never really had a feminist awakening because of the people who raised me. Because my parents also left the church not long after my baptism at age 8, I had the lucky fortune to be raised with what I consider the very best parts of Mormonism. I was raised with the teachings that I could develop an ability to commune personally with my heavenly parents, the belief in the importance of human relationships, eternal nature of souls, the grace of a merciful Christ, without having to deal with any of the baggage of patriarchy or organizational dysfunction, or just the general language that feared the world that I still despise. Perhaps it was because I had been shielded from the more problematic sides of the church, at least as it pertained to my lived experience, that in high school and college I had a series of spiritual insights that sealed me to Mormonism. Yet my childhood memories of dogmatic and nosy Mormon neighbors who did terrible things to my family in an effort to get us to come back to church, and irrational cultural norms about what constituted a good mother or a faithful understanding of the gospel were a constant reminder that I was an alien to this culture. In my mind, these issues were purely cultural, separate from the doctrine that surely didn't support such narrow ways of thinking. It wasn't until attending the temple and taking a few months to wrestle with the notion that some of what I had considered cultural flaws were actually deeply embedded doctrinal notions that I found out I did not have the off-type spiritual shelving on which to store my unresolved questions or disappointments. I felt like the church had failed me as a woman. More than anything, I was sure I was the only woman I knew who had these feelings and was still attending church. Thinking this way made me feel like I wasn't going to be able to continue much longer. By some miraculous stroke of luck, it was at precisely this time that Richard and Claudia Bushman came into our lives. My husband was a fellow at the now disbanded Summer Smith Institute in 1999. And Richard and Claudia became inspired and generous mentors to the both of us. Knowing that we would be moving to Cambridge the following year, Claudia insisted that I join up with the Exponent women. And for those of you who know Claudia, you just do whatever she tells you to do. In 2002, I attended my first retreat and found it to be a homecoming. The first order of business was a hymn. The song we sang in rousing, rich harmonies of many generations was Lula Green Richard's 1895 hymn, Woman Rise, which commanded women to sit thou in the dust no more, seize the scepter, hold the van, equal with thy brother man. In an instant, I knew I'd found my people. Most surprising to me at the time was the realization that they had been here since the beginning. After one weekend singing my favorite Mormon hymns within the framework of this new open feminist perspective, I was more convinced than ever that my feminist Mormon streak was a result of my faith, not in spite of it. If there was ever an organization that could prove it, this was the place. The timing of my arrival within the Sisterhood of Exponent 2 also seemed to coincide with a larger transitional moment in the Exponent organization, as well as Mormon feminism as a whole. There was a sense that could be seen in our dwindling subscription numbers as well as topics in the paper that some people were getting to the end of their fighting years, just as others of us were getting started. Compounding these issues was the fact that our Boston-based organization of more than 30 years was starting to disperse. Many members of the board left the state,
and though some have remained more active than others, God bless Barbara Taylor. Truly, God bless Barbara Taylor. She's held our little group together for a long time. The diaspora of a once very close-knit group has had interesting side effects. For some, the loss of immediate community of sisters took the joy out of doing the work. Instead of spirited board meetings held with treats from Trader Joe's and pasting up things on the light boards and time to catch up on personal lives while we were doing the hard work, we now find ourselves trying to decipher voices in conference calls and make complicated arguments over various technicalities via email. At the same time, this decentralization of Exponent has resulted in an even greater variety of Mormon voices entering the conversation. Our current staff consists of 17 women from coast to coast, women in all stages of life, women who feel like full partners in the organization, who may have felt on the fringe before. Though our readers' committee now takes place in the realm of Google Docs instead of in a quiet circle of readers in someone's living room, I hope there is a sense that no matter where we live, we're equal partners in this work. The privilege of being part of this group is no longer the result of being lucky enough to live in Boston or connections to a prestigious university, but it's solely the result of shared passions and commitment to the causes Exponent 2 has so long espoused. While uncertainty loomed over the paper these last 4 years, the blogger Napple seemed to find its stride. Between 2007 and 2009, Exponent published only 3 issues exclusively online. And the response to reading a publication online, in contrast to the immediate gratification of writing and responding to a blog post, did not appear to increase Exponent's reader or ridership. For 30 years, Mormon feminists depended on Exponent 2 for writing that consistently addressed the issues pertinent to them. Thanks to the advances in technology and the wonderful, ever-multiplying chorus of Mormon women who are finding their voice in cyberspace, including FMH, Zelopha Head's Daughters, and of course our own EX2 blog, the future and purpose of the paper had to be reconsidered before we could move forward. After several years of thinking and in preparation for this first issue printed since 2007, we had to ask ourselves what the purpose is of a print publication in the face of blogs and Kindle and 2010 in general. In our editorial letter prefacing our most recent issue of Exponent 2, which that's our cover and there are issues at the back, my co-editor Emily Kai Curtis and I wrote that the reason that we felt compelled to continue publishing in print was that both longtime readers and women new to Mormon feminism have expressed a longing for a reading experience beyond those available on the internet. The chance to sit and read longer pieces, to look at a wider historical context, and most importantly, perhaps, to take the time for the quiet reflection of sitting with someone else's experience without the ability or expectation to immediately fire back a response in the form of a comment thread. In print, the paper can also function as a kind of Mormon feminist pass-along card. Readers might slip issues to their bishop with particular articles marked up, or give a copy to a sister struggling with an issue that may be considered too taboo to share in traditional church settings. For all these reasons, we're committed to Exponent 2's publishing legacy of sharing our personal stories through essays, artwork, and poetry, alongside the wealth of new forums that are doing so much good to promote the feminist cause. In addition to the questions of format and whether or not to push forward in print, we've also found it necessary to address once again what Exponent is and how that relates to what people might want it to be or what they might assume it already is. From one side, Exponent 2 has always received criticism for being too unorthodox, too willing to accept a broad definition of what constitutes a Mormon woman. As we are gladly willing to publish the voices of women who have long left the church, as Caroline said, alongside with those who still thoughtfully and joyfully attend their weekly meetings. In all honesty, I have considered such criticism a badge of honor, proof that by stretching people's notions of Mormon womanhood, we were doing something right. Yet in the midst of these past 2 years, when Exponent has been rethinking its format, other forums and publications have been born implicit and explicitly in contrast to Exponent's mission to give voice to such a broad variety of voices and still dare to call ourselves Mormon. While as an organization, Exponent 2 is theoretically and morally bound and heartened to champion any forum that gives voice to Mormon women in their experience, I would be lying if I said being marginalized again in print as too radical, too provocative, and ultimately not really Mormon enough didn't open old wounds. In much the same way an individual woman doesn't want to be told this in response to her own personal spiritual inquiries, These old charges, leveled by those who openly regard and define themselves as more faithful, can still bear a sting that is a stark reminder of why we so dearly need this forum to continue, and why Exponent is glad to be the party that puts up the big tent. On the other hand, I have been equally disheartened when I read or hear of other women's disappointment that Exponent isn't serious or scholarly enough, that we don't do much, that we don't go further than print personal essays to make our theological point. What is personally interesting to me about this as the editor of Exponent 2 is that over the course of my life, I have found that I have a natural inclination to turn to more academic and intellectual resources to approach my theological and doctrinal struggles. I find great companionship and great solace in the people who are willing to work out their angst in research and other feats of intellectual strenuousness. But that said, I'm also a firm believer that the experience of women doesn't have to be translated into the form of historical scholarship before it can be taken seriously. I am hungry for even more scholarship from Mormon women on Mormon topics, and I'm thrilled to be part of a feminist organization that has always been a place that could showcase elements of that intellectual movement. But I'm equally proud of the fact that Exponent is also a place where a girl with a private, intellectually biased soul like mine can also just sit with someone else's experience. That my thinking on a particular topic can be transformed by details of a stranger's personal narrative, by reading another woman's response to loss, by learning how someone else approaches temple ritual and ends up in a different space than I do. For all these reasons, my co-editor Emily Curtis and I intend to maintain Exponent's original vision of publishing women's experiences and voices primarily through the medium of the personal essay, because we are interested in the breadth of lived experiences they demonstrate. We believe that by publishing the thoughts and experiences of women from across a wide spectrum, we can find validation in the wide variety of authentic Mormon lives. So now I'm going to give you my sales pitch. This is like the most missionary I ever get. I want to convert you all to be readers and writers of Exponent. So I hope you've all written down the address that you need to submit to. And I'm just going to go through a couple of things so that you all start thinking about things that you can write. These are new features that we have brought into the paper. And one of the things that came up at the Feminist Mormon Housewives panel this morning is the idea that it's one thing to have our relief society on the internet, but we have to take our relief society on the internet to the relief society. And figuring out ways to do that is one of the things that Exponent has always been committed to, and it's why this fantastic relief society lesson on the blog is so important, because although it may sound a little subversive, I think that we all believe in this so much, we want to see it reflected in our church culture. And so one of the things that we have all of the features that we have brought to the blog or to the paper are things that we're hoping will be able to translate easily into our actual lived church lives. We have a new section on women's theology that we want to give women the chance to really show through intellectual, academic, but also personal examples and exegesis and interfaith doctrinal comparisons that examine our own doctrine and those of others as we attempt to lay a foundation for Mormon feminist theology. We have a little section called Flannel Board, because we're trying to sometimes be funny and not so serious, that will hopefully give ideas for things people can do in Relief Society lessons, young women's lessons, primary, I would say even priesthood. Hopefully we'll be passing things along to our priesthood leaders as well. That have a feminist perspective, little ways that we can interject the very things that we most believe in into our actual lived Sunday experience. Another feature that we have, and something that struck me today that somebody else brought up at the Feminist Mormon Housewives, it was a quote I really liked, that people have widely divergent religious experiences based on their geography. Exponent is very aware of this difference in lived experience. And so one of the things we're hoping to do is bring in the voice of women all around the church so we get that kind of contrast and understanding of how what we think here in Utah and in the United States as feminists can influence and we can be influenced by people living in the church elsewhere. And the last feature we're really excited about is the reason the Exponent still exists, is we have a history and a long heritage that we can tap into. And by every issue, we want to show that some of the themes that we're talking about today, when you're a brand new feminist who just had your awakening, sometimes the idea, it feels like you're the first person who ever thought it. But one of the things we're really excited about is the opportunity to show that our very, you know, our ancestral foremothers back in the 1880s were thinking and feeling some of the same things that we are feeling today. And this new feature, the Exponent Generations, kind of picks a theme and draws from these three publications to show how we really are united in this sisterhood. On a final note, the question I've been repeatedly asked by people about why I'm doing this, because it takes up a lot of time and it doesn't pay anything, and it's kind of a lot of angst. I have been really surprised at the instinctive response that I've had every time someone's asked me why I'm doing this. I really do feel like my work with Exponent 2 is my best and most sincere expression of my commitment to the church. I don't really have another way of expressing my commitment to the church that feels as meaningful and authentic as my relationship with Exponent. I was moved by yesterday's powerful seminar on the faithfulness found in dissident voices, and I found myself wanting to say, and to borrow from Joseph Smith, a quote, that I am willing to publish, promote, and stand alongside my weary Mormon sisters, whether I ascend to heaven or descend to hell or go to any other place. And if we go to hell, we will turn the devils out of doors and make a heaven of it. Where this people are, there is good society. As an Exponent woman, I know this to be the case. Woo-hoo!
We have about 10 minutes for questions or comments. There might be trouble with this microphone, so there's one right down here that works. Anyone?
So wonderful, and you're crying all the way through it back there. You're all so wonderful. I love you. And Barbara, it's so good to see you, and I'm so excited for you to go back to school. And Caroline, thank you so much for mentioning that you found Exponent 2 through Women in Authority. If one woman found Exponent 2 through Women in Authority, my job was done. I'm happy. And I want to just tell you two quick stories about Exponent 2. Because without Exponent 2, I don't know if I would be a feminist and Women in Authority probably not exist.
See, I don't think that might be.
Oh, am I talking like this?
Yeah. Is it on? It sounds on.
Is it on?
Can you hear? Merle, can you hear? Yep. Just speak right into it.
Okay, wow. Swallowing.
Can you hear in the back?
Yes.
Okay.
Can you? Okay. I found Exponent 2 when I was a student at Ricks College in the winter of 1975-76, studying in the library every day. And you know how you have that experience sometimes where an invisible force will pull your attention to something on a shelf, a book, and that you wouldn't have noticed. And I was looking on the shelves, and I saw this strange kind of magazine or something on the shelf, and I pulled it off, and I looked at it, and I took it back to my table, and I began looking at it. And my first thought was, I was ecstatic, I was amazed that anything like this existed. I'd never seen it before, I didn't know who these women were. I felt so alone as a feminist. And finding Exponent 2 on the shelves of the Ricks College Library in 1975-76, especially with that incredible, you know, psychedelic cover by Carolyn Person, you know, I love her covers, I love those. I knew I wasn't alone. And I knew that I wasn't as strange and weird as I thought, I feared I was. And I thought, somebody else is out there. Somebody else, there's more than just me. And that was an awakening for me. And I sat there reading it, afraid, kind of hiding it behind my other books, afraid that somebody was going to see me reading this. I thought, this is a dangerous but blessed publication. The other story I want to share really quickly is that it's fascinating that those primary excerpts ended up in Women in Authority. I was behind schedule. The publisher was pressuring me to go to press. And I realized as I was getting ready to go to press that I really needed to include primary documents. Because I thought there are so many women out there who don't have the opportunity to go to the archives here in Salt Lake and see these issues of the Women's Exponent and Exponent 2. And I had been reading these for years, and I just felt spiritually directed to include primary material so that readers out there could have the experience of going to the archives and seeing these documents. And I had, as part of my research for Women in Authority, I had read every issue of the Woman's Exponent and every issue of Exponent 2 and every issue of the Mormons for ERA and every issue, of course, of the Mormon Women's Forum and the Algae Ballot Forum, and I just thought, I've got to include these excerpts. And what I want to tell you is that as I went, two things I want to tell you about that. As I went through the excerpts, while I felt spiritually prompted, directed to include those, but as I went through them and pulled them out, again, it was as if certain pieces called out to me. And I know that you all know what I'm talking about. And as I finished compiling them and selecting them to put into Women in Authority, as I got to the end, I felt like I wanted to include an excerpt from Sonia Johnson's Housewife to Heretic. Mm-hmm. From Housewife to Heretic. And hers was the last excerpt that I pulled together. And I should back up. When I wanted to include the excerpts from Exponent 2, I called Sue Paxman to ask her if I could. She said, yes, but you've got to call every single person and get permission from them individually. And my publisher was ready to kill me. You know, they thought the book was too big anyway. And I know Heavenly Mother intervened and helped me to talk them into it, to letting me include that in there. But I called every single person who I excerpted and got their individual permission. But as I prepared that last, I came to that last excerpt in Sonia's book, she described an event, an experience that she had. And it gave me chills. Because as I had been researching and compounding Women in Authority, I had the same spiritual experience. And what Sonia Johnson described was that as she was working on Mormons for ERA, she felt the presence of the early women of the Woman's Exponent, Melanie Wells and the others around her, with her. And she describes this spiritual experience that she had. And then she describes that she had told some of the other women in the Mormons for ERA group about it. And some of the others said, that's amazing, I've had the same experience. And they began comparing notes that they had individually had this spiritual experience of feeling the presence of the women from the 19th century wave. And as I sat there reading that as the final excerpt that I was pulling out to include in that section, I started crying because I had had that same experience while I was working on Women in Authority, and I felt guided and directed to include those excerpts. And when that final excerpt fell into place, which I had no idea that it was in there, it confirmed my own experience. And I can tell you that I felt their presence. And I can tell you that they are with you. They're around us. They're still with us. And they're still, they care. And it's a remarkable experience that a number of women have had individually. So I just wanted to share that with you and tell you how much I love you and how much my own feminism and my work is dependent upon Exponent 2. Thank you so much. Thank you.
He's talking to the mic.
I don't have so much question as like gushing affection, but I wanted to plug the magazine because it's so beautiful. You should be so proud. But I think another argument that I saw at first glance at this magazine for going through the trouble of putting it in print was the artwork. Mm-hmm. I mean, the internet, mm-hmm. as much as I'm a fan, really does not do a ton of justice to the visual artwork. And when you see it, it's just crammed on every page, and it's so beautiful. And I really love that connection to our female tradition, that throughout our history, we might not have had a voice, but we often had a quilt or a paintbrush or something. So I love that connection as well, and I think that comes through so clearly in the print when, you know, with all of our different monitors, it loses something on the internet. So anyway, well done. It's beautiful.
I'll say one thing quickly. I just have a little voice. I wanted to just mention one thing, and I'm,
I'm not nearly as articulate as the two people who preceded me.
Shush.
So this will be short and to the point. Having recently done a stint as the education advisor, education counselor in Relief Society, what became my practice to print off the Relief Society lesson and hand it to the sisters and say, perhaps you'd be interested in this point of view. And they were.
Questions, we'll thank our panelists. And don't forget, the beautiful Emily Clyde Curtis is in the back selling copies of this. Thank you.